The Wagner family was on Interstate 77. We had just left Interstate 81. We were leaving Southwest Virginia, approaching that part of the road where it comes into North Carolina. We were traveling at, my original manuscript said 75 miles an hour. I changed that to 70. We were traveling at 70 miles an hour. And then we came to a standstill. And we weren't alone. Everybody on that road came to a standstill. We waited. Do you know that part of southwestern Virginia? There's farms, mountains, and there's that Civil War bell tower where they made the cannonballs, and that's about it. There was nowhere to exit. There were no food stops. There were no towns. Roanoke was in the rearview mirror quite a ways. It was Saturday night in November. Then the traffic started to creep, and it just crept for a while. We eventually climbed the mountain slowly. What had caused the problem? Living as we do here, we would first say, traffic. No, it wasn't the traffic. There would have been traffic had you been coming back to Atlanta on Sunday after Thanksgiving, but not Saturday after Thanksgiving. It was not an accident, thankfully. It wasn't construction. Have you ever encountered it while you were driving? It explains why there are stretches of mountain highway that have lights sunk into the center lane. Dense mountain fog. Thick, blanketed, pea soup fog. And you couldn't see out of that cloud on the mountain. It was unlike anything I had ever seen. Except maybe when you fly and go through the clouds going up and fly going through the clouds coming back. We could only and barely see the taillights of the car right in front of us. We just crept along in low visibility until finally we made it up to the top of the mountain. And as we descended toward Charlotte, things opened up and we resumed driving 65 miles an hour. It's scary, isn't it, when you can't see where you're going? Maybe you got a medical test and suddenly you're disoriented and not sure what the future holds. Maybe the company has started to whisper about downsizing or reorganizing and suddenly you're disoriented about the future. Maybe there's been a loss or an illness or a distant virus that suddenly disrupts everything. Disorientation. Do you recall the look on President Bush's face when he's speaking to a group of children in Florida in an elementary school and an aide comes up to him and whispers in his ear, "Surely something about two planes have hit the Twin Towers in New York." And suddenly visibility is gone. And there's that fear and there's that disorientation, that sense of what does this mean and what might happen and where do we go? Jesus called his followers to go up a mountain with him. A mountain would have symbolized and represented where heaven and earth meet. So that very thin place between earth and heaven. He had called his followers to go up to a mountain with him, and before them they would see him change, but then quickly they would lose all visibility when a cloud came upon him. These were the very same ones Jesus had called them by name and said, "Come and follow me." And they did. And sometimes following, you lose your path, you lose your way. You get disoriented, maybe distracted. I heard a radio DJ this week talking about what it was like in the 60s and 70s with his rock and roll band and what it was like for all of the musicians and the era of that time. He said the culture for us just had us all doing drugs. It's just the way it was. How did we start? Why did it happen? He said, "I don't know how we got into it. It started off with experimentation, but it always ends up with agony." How quickly you can go from flying down the road to suddenly be completely stopped. I know that, like you, American culture and American opinion these days is rather pessimistic about the future and somewhat disgruntled about the nation. So I did a Google search just to see what are the surveys saying? What are the articles saying about the discontentedness that you hear so much about? The Google search pulled up three quick results. One was an article in The Atlantic from 2017, How America Went Haywire. I went to the next item that came up in the search, and this was a Pew Research survey. Looking to the future, the American public sees a decline. Lostness, disorientation, fear about which way to go. A third article, 2016, Washington Post, the title, Americans are losing their faith in both democracy and one another. Those results probably don't surprise you, do they? Didn't surprise me. I looked more closely, not at the articles so much, but the Pew Research. I wanted to know what was the general opinion of folks in the country and what was the tone of what they were thinking. The general consensus of that survey says that over the next 30 years, a majority of Americans expect things to decline economically, politically, and with the national debt burgeoning and a wider gap between the haves and the have-nots and continued threat of automation and environmental destruction. These are the things Americans are concerned about looking ahead. Majorities are predicting that older adults are going to have a harder time just making ends meet. 7 in 10 of us these days are dissatisfied with the way things are going in the country. 7 out of 10. According to the survey, that's the highest it's ever been. 8 out of 10 say that government in Washington is just not working. Well, let's stop there. And we know there's some discontentedness and some uncertainty about the future and which way we ought to go. Low visibility, as it were. What's going to fix it? What do we need to do? Or how can we make improvements so that the future goes from fearful to hopeful and from stagnation to progress? Well, the survey said Americans don't think the government can really bring a solution. More and more Americans are looking to three things to fix the problem. You can probably guess what they are. Science, technology, and education. That sounds like a lot of the younger folks I know. I don't know a young person who doesn't think a new app makes the world a better place. The Pew survey, if you've lost my train of thought a little bit, if you've lost your train of thought a little bit, the Pew survey says most in our country feel a lot of dissatisfaction and see a lot of problems. And the majority feel like government can't fix it, and the best hope we have is technology, education, and science. When the cloud came upon Peter, James, and John, they were having a mountaintop vision, but then they lost it in the low visibility which the cloud brought. They had seen Moses, the lawgiver. They had seen Elijah, the great prophet. They had been with Jesus, but then it was all gone. And they fell to the ground in terror. The proverb says, people perish without a vision. They had just had this glorious vision of the heavenly, transfigured Christ in their midst, shining like the sun. Moments later, they couldn't even see. Have you ever had faith one moment and fear the next? Can you relate to saying, Christ is with me this second and vanished the next? Now I see you, now I don't. Peter says, let's make tents and make this moment stay forever. And then Peter said, I'm afraid. Let's get off this mountain. I had the most glorious service of worship I can remember in my life of ministry. It was an Easter service some years ago. We had to bring in chairs along the side and the back of the church, and the proclamation of new life and sermon and prayers and music was just fabulous. And I wasn't out the sanctuary door 2 minutes before I was accosted by a member of the church who said, where are the scissors that belong in the office? Lady, I have just been on the mountaintop. I am not ready for the valley of your discontent. You ever been there? About all you can do when you come to that place of, I can't see, is stop and wait. And that's what the disciples do. They will stop and they wait. There's no vision. There's low visibility. It had been great, but now it's gone. And they wait in fear. Do you notice what happens next? They get a word from the cloud. Thank God there is a word. And one of my favorite seminary professors for his writing is Doug Hare. He taught at Pittsburgh Seminary for a long time. And he died in 2015 at the age of 86. But here are the words he leaves for us on this passage. In the Old Testament and in the New Testament generally, word is given priority over vision, hearing over sight. Visual images have their place, he says, in the Bible and in the life of faith. But when it's something important, God communicates through a word. Seeing Jesus transfigured has value, but only to the extent that it has the disciples listening to obey his word. I closed that commentary last night and I said to Heather, I'm glad I bought this book. That's good. Listening for the word. Not Moses, says God, not the law of Sinai, not Elijah and not the other prophets, but your saving light that leads to life is the word made flesh, is my beloved son Jesus. He is the way. He is the truth. He is the life. The heavenly voice put it very succinctly, didn't it? Listen to him. God could have said, listen to Emperor Caesar who sits on the throne of Rome. He has power and money and great armies. But God didn't say that. God could have said, listen to the priests at the temple as they invite you to present your sacrifices. God could have said, listen to what the Pharisees teach. They know how to live an obedient life. God could have said, look to the stars. Or read Aristotle and Plato, or pursue commerce and profits and economy. But God said none of those things. God lifted up Jesus as the beloved Son and said, listen to him. Someone shared with me a cartoon, I was either this or last week, and the cartoon pictured Jesus as you would draw him. So he has on a robe and a long beard, and he looks very Jesus-like, you know, with the long hair. And he's sitting down conversing with two young adults, maybe youth, from America. And these young adults are dressed the way you would expect them to be dressed, and they have a cell phone in their hand. And Jesus is saying to them, no, not through Facebook and not through Twitter. Literally, I want you to follow me. Literally. A light to the path, hope for the future. You know where Jesus is going, this one to whom we are to listen. He touches those fearful disciples. He calls them surely by name and says, get up and follow me. And where is he going? Well, we know what's ahead for him. He's going to Jerusalem. He will arrive there as we celebrate on Palm Sunday. He will lead them to the table, the Passover feast, and there institute the Lord's Supper and give to them the new commandment, love one another as I have loved you. Listen to him. He will give his life on the cross of Good Friday for the sins of the world. And on the third day, he will rise in victory, having conquered the powers of sin and death, in a celebration we shall know as Easter Sunday. When you can't see your way forward, stop and kneel. Listen for him. Listen to him. And then follow him, who is the way, the truth, and the life. A blessed 40 days of Lent to all of you. Amen.